live from Washington, D.C. every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. for an hour-long Generation Progress Takeover.
Check us out at genprogress.org or on Twitter at genprogress.
Hello, and welcome to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I am your co-host, Charlotte Hancock, and today, sitting in for Brent Cohen, who actually has strep throat. Everybody wash your hands. Maybe I shouldn't share that on air. is our senior press associate, Emily Leach, for her radio debut. Emily, thank you for co-hosting with me.
Thanks, Charlotte. I'm excited to be here.
We also have some great guests in studio today. Juan Manuel Guzman from United We Dream, and also Claudia Flores from the Center for American Progress. Thank you both so much for joining us in studio today.
Thanks to you.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
And so today we have a show about a really big moment coming up in the Supreme Court for lots of people who live in this country, call this country home, have called this country home for almost their entire lives. In less than 2 weeks, on November 12th, the Supreme Court will hear a case on the Trump administration's decision to terminate the DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which allowed people who came to the U.S. as young children to stay and work in the only country they've ever really known. And as we record this today, right now, a group of DACA recipients known as Dreamers and temporary protected status holders and also allies are traveling 230 miles on foot from New York City to Washington, D.C. as part of the Home Is Here March, which is being led by the National Korean American Services and Education Consortium to draw attention to this case and to the need to protect the rights of undocumented people in this country. So to talk to us about the Home Is Here campaign and the upcoming Supreme Court case, we're joined today by Juan Manuel Guzman, the advocacy and policy manager from United We Dream, and Claudia Flores, the immigration campaign manager at the Center for American Progress. And we're really glad to have you guys here. So I think we'll just jump right in. I wanted to give people a little bit of a background about how you guys came to this work, the places that you guys work. So to start us off, Juan Manuel, can you share a bit about the mission and purpose of United We Dream, where you work, and how you came to this space?
Yeah, absolutely. United We Dream started basically about 10 years ago, and it was mainly in its beginnings, it was about education. It was about passing the DREAM Act. But as the movement grew and as the movement evolved, we realized that it's not just about access to papers, but it, like, all these things are rooted in really deep social inequalities, like racial justice issues. So it evolved, and nowadays our vision is creating a space, a world where immigrants, people of color, everyone has an opportunity, has a shot, right?
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much for being here with us. Yeah. What does your role as advocacy and policy director of United We Dream entail?
Yeah, to be precise, I'm the advocacy policy manager there. So I basically work with a lot of groups of immigrant youth from across the country, and I work with them in their state and local policies. I think we didn't see it before that local and state governments are so key, so important for the well-being of immigrant families. So I work with them.
Great. And Claudia, what's your role on the immigration team at the Center for American Progress?
Ooh, where do I start? the Center for American Progress, for those that have been, you know, listening to us in the past, we are a nonpartisan think tank based in Washington, D.C. We advance progressive policies that we hope will impact people's daily lives. And as we like to say here, we're not trying to just advance policies that will transform, the progressive space, but also the entire nation as a whole. So we have been working for many years now. CAP has been providing the latest data and resources specific to not just the DACA program, but also, for individuals that have been residing in the United States for many decades. So CAP has for many, many years worked alongside the coalition in, protecting immigrant families, but also advancing policy ideas that would create a more fair and just immigration system.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Well, so before we dive a little bit more into what's going on right now with the Home is Here campaign and with the Supreme Court case, I was wondering if you could give us a little bit more of a background on how we got to this point and what's been going on in the immigration space recently.
Totally. So as it was mentioned, so on November 12th, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be hearing oral arguments on three cases. These cases were filed around after 2017 when the Trump administration ended the DACA program. And the U.S. government took the extraordinary steps of appealing to the Supreme Court before the Court of Appeals had made final judgment on three of the litigations. And now the court in June of this year decided to take the government's petition. So what is going on is that on November 12th, there's going to be three cases that have been consolidated. They're going to be arguing for 1 hour. And the court should decide no later than June of next year whether or not the Trump administration's termination of the DACA program was lawful. So far, there have been federal injunctions nationwide that have allowed DACA recipients to continue to renew their protections under the program. However, we note that a decision from the court could determine whether those renewals remain open, whether new people can apply to the program. As you know, in its current form, there are no new first-time applicants that can come into the program. And we do have data showing that close to 100,000 high school students, undocumented youth, are graduating every year from high schools across the country. So if you want to talk about what's at stake, I mean, we're talking about the livelihood of right now currently almost 700,000 people who are enrolled in the program, but also those who would be eligible if the program were to open and operate like it was intended to since it was, incepted in 2012. So there is a lot at stake and the, Supreme Court will hear from the lawyers that will be arguing on behalf of DACA recipients, and we will be marching and rallying outside the court on that morning.
So I don't want to ask for justification or rationale behind pretty much anything that Trump or the Trump administration have done, because I think so often we find that there isn't something good, or that the it's grounded in something so heinous and so despicable that we don't really want to believe that this is something that's like in charge in our country or leading our country, right? But I want to try to figure out here a little bit, like, how did Trump even think he had legal grounds to begin with? Like, what was his excuse for bringing this up?
So it's interesting. The Trump administration has essentially, said that, that President Obama did not have the authority to create DACA. Yet they're using that same argument to say, well, we did have the authority to end it. So they've essentially contradicted themselves. So that is actually going to be at the center of the arguments, right? What power does the executive have? There are certain, rules that they have to follow. They can't simply like terminate these programs and disrupt the lives of, in this case, almost a million people. So there's a lot at stake here, in terms of rationale, as we've seen from the Trump administration, with the ending of programs like temporary protective status and other forms of protection for longtime community residents. I mean, the main goal has been to create disruption and chaos. And, that is not how the government should function. That, creates a lot of real threats for the people that are directly impacted, but also for communities across the country that, not just benefit economically from, DACA recipients, but, who are, for instance, in mixed status families with DACA recipients. We know that there's almost, 300,000 children, U.S. citizen children, who have a parent protected under DACA. So, the stakes of the program and what the court is going to be deciding on go beyond just the beneficiaries themselves, but also their families and communities.
Absolutely. Juan Manuel, do you have anything that you really want to add or you want to make sure that we touch on here?
I think for us, what we have seen, this is obviously DACA is one issue out of a lot of things that has been happening. Mm-hmm. The Trump administration, or Trump as a candidate, he used immigrants, he used Muslims, he used, everything that he could to rile up his base and basically put on the blame of structural inequalities into immigrants and people of color. Like, and he used this excuses to end programs and to pass, execute policies like the separation of families. Like, it was so horrible, the zero tolerance policies. So DACA is one of many things that the Trump administration has been doing to undermine protections for people, to take away those protections and, you know, endangering their lives. And he is using this as leverage for things that he wants. So we have to make clear that in all this context of DACA, in what's happening in the country, we have to think about that DACA is one piece of our larger agenda from the Trump administration.
Absolutely. I think that's so true. It's a pattern. You know, this is just one piece of something that Trump and his administration is doing to cause harm to specifically immigrants, but even more specifically Black and brown immigrants, immigrants mm-hmm. of color. You know, it's very interesting and no coincidence the communities that he seems to really be targeting, precision targeting with some of the grounds that he's pulling out here. So we are talking here in studio with Juan Manuel Guzman from United We Dream and Claudia Flores from the Center for American Progress. You are listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show, and we will be right back after this break. Co-host, and today standing in for Brent J. Cohen, we have our Senior Press Associate, Emily Leach.
Hi.
Emily, thank you for co-hosting with me today.
Of course.
And here in studio, we also have Juan Manuel Guzman from United We Dream. Juan Manuel, thank you for being with us in the studio today.
Thanks, you.
And we also have Claudia Flores from the Center for American Progress, and she's the Immigration Campaign Manager there. Claudia, thanks so much for being with us in studio.
Thank you, guys.
And today we're talking about a super important Supreme Court case that's coming up in just a couple of weeks, the results of which will impact the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. So it's a big one. And we're talking about the Supreme Court case that will determine whether or not the DACA ruling has any legal grounds based on, or determine whether or not the Trump administration's ruling on the DACA on DACA legislation has any legal grounds. So Claudia, at a high level, what do we know about the DACA case that will be taken up by the Supreme Court on November 12th?
So there's a couple of things. I think, you know, we are standing on pretty strong legal grounds. We know that there's been now three federal judges that have ruled that the Trump administration's, you know, the way they ended the program was unlawful. So we are hopeful that, you know, the Supreme Court does not fall into doing the dirty work for Trump, and that it does, in fact, reiterate what federal judges have said across the country, which is that they ended the program unlawfully. We are, you know, closely monitoring. I think at the end of the day, we'll have to, you know, face what seems to be a conservative majority court. This has been one of the big impacts of the Trump administration, right, when it comes to judges. But we are hopeful that, you know, the merits of the case itself, I mean, the impact that it would have across the country and across communities. I mean, I've mentioned that, you know, there's nearly 300,000 U.S.-born children that have at least one parent who is protected under the program. But also across the country, there's 1.5 million people that live in a household with a DACA beneficiary. So you can only imagine, you know, in addition to the full list of things that the administration is doing against immigrant families in this country, I mean, this will be sort of the next family separation crisis in the making if you were to, in fact, you know, go after detaining and deporting DACA beneficiaries. So there is a lot at stake, but we are hopeful that the judges will not fall into the administration's trap and instead uphold the rule of law and make sure that, you know, this program remains.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about kind of the impacts of all of the stories of the people that you just mentioned, Juan, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, I know that United We Dream is sharing the stories of 27 different DACA recipients in both written and video form in an amicus brief for the Supreme Court. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that and what you guys are hoping to accomplish with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the amicus brief that we just filed, it's very particular. Like, United We Dream has done amicus briefs before that has been have always been centered on people. Amicus briefs usually are very, you know, legal lace, if you will. Like, mm-hmm. if you will, like, they are very centered on arguments that are very legal in nature, but
sort of technical and
technical, yeah. And they are boring. But we wanted to give a little bit of you know, of life to this amicus brief, and the idea was to include the stories, make it centered on people's stories. Not only that, but also adding a link to whoever is going to be reading, probably a Supreme Court clerk or the justices, right? Like reading this through in their computers, and they will be able to click on the link, and they will be able to see the faces and the lives of people who are going to be affected by their decisions. So you can go to homeishere.us. You will see some of those videos that are right now. They are amazingly beautiful. And again, like this amicus brief that United Woodrum has worked on, it is very centered on the lives and centered on the humanity of people, rather than that technical aspect that, I mean, many other organizations are right now putting their opinions on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that that's huge. I mean, as you're saying, like, this is not just policy, right? This is people's lives at stake. There's lots of people's lives at stake. And I think that's huge that we sort of treat this as something that is, I mean, not just a legal argument, but like a moral argument here, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. And I think the idea is that for people who are in the legal in the legal field, I think they concentrate way too much, right? Like they will concentrate a lot on the technical aspects of DACA mm-hmm. and the way the president ended the program. But also, what about the lives of people? What about like what they have been doing so far? There's a lot of people going to school. There's a lot of people working. There's people with that have plans. People want to buy their houses. Like people are just trying to make a living. And their decision is not based only on legal grounds. It has to be also based on those and how those decisions are going to affect the lives of nearly 700,000 people.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. So, Claudia, thinking about the current makeup of the court, as you mentioned earlier, the Trump administration has really stacked the courts in their favor. I mean, not just the Supreme Court. Courts around the country have been stacked with conservative judges. So many of these lifetime appointments, it's really something that we're going to be contending with for decades to come, unfortunately, some of the ramifications of this. But in the Supreme Court in particular, which justices could be critical to convince? Who could this come down to?
I mean, at this point, every single one. I mean, you know, we are going to have to make the case to each one. I think it's a very good way to think about the court as every single judge being a court itself. Obviously, we know that, you know, there are some, you know,
I'm sorry, Claudia, I'm going to have to cut you off, and we'll be right back after this break. On the boats and on the planes, they're coming to America. Never
Leslie Marshall Show. I'm your co-host, Emily Leach.
And I'm Charlotte Hancock.
And today we're talking with Juan Manuel Guzman, the Advocacy and Policy Manager for United We Dream, and Claudia Flores from the Center for American Progress. So Claudia, I just wanted to bring us back by talking about, you know, we've heard what's at stake for the, with the Supreme Court case, but what can folks do now? And, you know, how specifically can DACA recipients get involved?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the main things right now that we're creating awareness about is the need for renewals. So for allies, we really want folks to support renewal applications. The fees are close to $500. It's $495 for each application. So that's a huge amount for young people. So we are encouraging folks to donate to the renewal fund. And then for DACA recipients themselves, you know, we are suggesting that folks, you know, look at their legal options, you know, go to screenings. There's right now a lot of information out there to support renewals. And, you know, we're hoping that folks are renewing their permits if they're eligible to do so. There is a campaign website called homeishere.us. We're hoping that folks are visiting that to find ways to plug in. And then CAP has a lot of resources on DACA. We have created a website that's americanprogress.org/DACA. We have all our data there. And we also have the latest data monitoring DACA renewal status. We know that between now and when the decision is anticipated, between, you know, no later than June of next year, we have about 157,000 DACA recipients who have expiring work permits. So that just gives you a sense of the magnitude of how many renewals need to be processed between now and when a decision is anticipated. So we're calling on folks to renew. We're calling on folks who are in D.C. can join us outside the Supreme Court. And I know Juan Manuel with United We Dream has been working with the coalition on a lot of activities that folks can plug in, and he's probably going to be sharing some of these today.
Awesome.
Yeah, $500. Sorry, I just want to go back to that real fast. $500. And to sort of reiterate, like, if you're a DACA recipient, you are by definition a millennial. Like, these are all young people. The legislation was created it was created in such a way that only a certain demographic of young people living in America right now have access to this. So this is not people who are well established. And, you know, you probably hear a lot about millennials struggling to buy a car, start families, that sort of thing. Anyway, a $500 fee slapped on top of that with somebody who might be working in the gig economy, as many millennials, many of us are, not easy. Really not easy. Lots of barriers.
Yeah, definitely not easy. And I think, you know, folks that are not in the program need to also understand that, you know, for DACA recipients, you know, in a way, it's a big consideration in terms of the time of protection that they have. Mm-hmm. Because once USCIS adjudicates your work permit, you know, your timing, your two-year permit is based on that date. So, you know, while we're encouraging folks to renew early, we also understand that, you know, DACA recipients then have to, you know, be, you know, facing the consequence that maybe they will have less time that if they wait closer to that end. So it is a decision that they need to assess, but it's also a almost preemptive decision that I think we're encouraging folks to consider, especially if they have permits expiring this year, because we do know that it takes at least several months to process a DACA renewal application. So there's a lot at stake, you know, the cost, the timing, and also the resources, you know, trying to get people the right information that they need at the right time.
So Claudia, I know you're only with us for just a few more minutes here. For our last question before you head out, I really want to drill down a little bit more, like, who is going to be most impacted by this decision?
I mean, I think at the heart of this decision, DACA recipients themselves. I mean, this has been a program that since 2012, I mean, CAP has been tracking the impacts, and, you know, they've been tremendous. You know, we have a survey that we've done in partnership with NILC, United We Dream, every year. And, you know, every day, you know, Dreamers and DACA recipients themselves, you know, fear their sense of stability, their livelihoods are at stake. And then for LGBTQ Dreamers, I think, you know, DACA has been, you know, from, you know, discussions we've had with folks and some of the research, I mean, it's been, you know, as they share, you know, it's coming out of the closet twice, right? It's really coming out of the shadows in so many ways and finding their identity. So, you know, their sense of safety is really at stake. And return to some of these countries where they're, you know, just on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, and, you know, their identities itself, like, you know, they would run into real risk and will be threatened. So there's a lot of stake for DACA beneficiaries, for children, like I mentioned, you know, nearly 250,000 children that have DACA recipients, one of their parents who's a DACA recipient, and then for 1.5 million households across the country. And then, you know, our economy would be impacted heavily. So there is an impact for the nation, but especially for immigrants, you know, and immigrant families that are, you know, feeling the real chilling effects of Trump's policies. I think this is a huge awaited case, and that's why we need all the support. And, you know, if you are listening, we need you to be calling, you know, call your members of Congress, remind them that you're standing with Dreamers, you know, show up to the court on November 12th, you know, show up to rallies and marches in your communities, and check out homeishere.us to find ways that you can take action.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was Claudia Flores from the Center for American Progress. She's their immigration campaign manager. Claudia has to head out now, but we will be right back after this commercial break with a little bit more from our other guest, Juan Manuel Guzman from United We Dream. We are talking about all things immigration policy this fall, the Supreme Court case coming up on DACA, and also the Home Is Here campaign. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the young people who've been marching from New York to D.C. All the way down to the Supreme Court over the past couple of weeks. You've been listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. Co-host Charlotte Hancock, and joining me today as my co-host, we have our senior press associate Emily Leach sitting in.
Hi, everyone.
Emily, thanks so much for co-hosting with me today. And we also have a great guest here in studio. We're joined today by Juan Manuel Guzman from United We Dream. He is their advocacy and policy manager. Thanks for being here.
Thanks to you.
So we talked a little bit just before the break about this like awesome group of people who are mm-hmm. marching from New York City and stopping in cities all the way down on the way to Washington, D.C., with their final destination being where in the city?
The final destination, the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Okay. And so can you tell us a little bit more about who are these marchers? I know United We Dream is supporting the march. It's led by the mm-hmm. National Korean American Service and Education Consortium. What's the significance of walking all the way from New York City to Washington, D.C.? And who are we talking about?
Yeah, it's making a statement, right? It's making a statement and calling the attention to this very important issue. 200 DACA recipients, allies, and other affected people are marching from New York. And basically, they are visiting communities and letting them know this is happening. They have stops in different cities. It's going to be about 16 to 18 days. I believe they will be arriving November 11th. To Washington, D.C., and they will be, or to Baltimore, and they will be arriving to Washington, D.C. November 12th. It's a very important statement from people affected and being able to, you know, take this message at least in a few cities of this country. I have friends who are there, who are marching, and you see, when I see their posts on social media, you can see that it's difficult. It's raining. It's cold. But they have the spirit and they have, you know, that willingness to keep on going despite of how hard the road is.
So this is all part of the Home Is Here campaign, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the goals of the Home Is Here campaign more generally?
Yeah, so the Home Is Here campaign, well, it's a coalition, right, of different organizations,
yeah.
Like Forward, Forward, we have CAP, NACASEG, United We Dream, Make the Road, New York.
So it's Generation Progress also.
Generation Progress. So it's a coalition of organizations that decided to join forces to bring attention, national attention, to the issue of DACA at the Supreme Court. And there's a series of events. There's a series of rallies. For example, like we're going to have on November 8th, for example, there's going to be walkouts here in the Washington, D.C. area and in Texas. Then we are going to have, like, I know that there's digital tweet storms. There's going to be a bunch of events. And then we have the rally on November 12th that is going to last from 10 a.m. to all the way to 3 p.m. It's a campaign to basically bring attention to the issue, and also hopefully that this attention will get it to the people who are going to be making decisions on the lives of 700,000 DACA recipients.
Yeah, and I think even the name of the campaign says so much, right? Home Is Here. Like, when we're talking about who this is supporting, This is young people who have, can you tell us a little bit more about, like, what is, for people who maybe are sort of like, okay, like, I've heard of DACA, who is a DACA recipient? Like, what does that look like to me?
Yeah, I mean, Home is Here, it's basically saying out loud that we belong, right? Like, we are part of here. Like, I don't see myself in another place. Because the Trump administration seems to think that DACA recipients are somehow not Americans, or like they do not belong in this country. And it's been from not only DACA recipients, this has been for TPS recipients, for members of the LGBTQ community, for Muslim, for our brother and sisters from the Muslim community. So it's basically letting not just them, but like Trump administration, everyone, letting them know that this is home. Home is here. It's so powerful, just to say.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, part of the other, another way that people are drawing attention to what's going on right now is that there is a week of action that's going to be taking place coming up. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about that and, you know, what's going to be happening during that week and how people can maybe get involved in that?
Yeah, so as I said, one of them is the walkouts on November 8th. Then we will be driving DACA renewals. Like, throughout that week, we will be pushing DACA renewals. We're asking people, please support DACA recipients by donating. The United We Dream has the DACA Renewal Fund, and as we have indicated, like the renewals is almost $500.
Yeah.
So we're pushing people into that. We are trying to make the hashtag Home Is Here trend. Mm-hmm. So that week we're gonna have tweet storms, sharing this information publicly online. The rallies and the actions throughout the country. So I think it's a whole week that ends obviously in the peaks on the hearing on November 12th.
Yeah, that's awesome. So much going on. Great. And then I think, you know, looking towards the rest of the month, the other thing that's coming up in November is that Congress is going to need to pass a continuing resolution by November 21st that's going to talk about funding and, you know, we need to keep the government open. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what the, you know, appropriations look like right now. And, you know, the defund hate movement is a big part of that. But just what you guys are doing on that side.
Well, yeah, I think it departs from the idea that, you know, budgets reflect priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have seen from this administration is that everything that it deals with, education, healthcare, and everything that people need, we haven't seen cuts to those budgets. But everything that is in terms of weapons, in terms of you know, the jailing of immigrant black and brown people, their budgets have been going up.
Right.
One very dangerous trend is that there is about 55,000 people, immigrants, who are in jail right now, who are in detention just because of being who they are, of being immigrants. And that number has increased a great deal. It used to be less than 30,000. The idea is that what has been enabling the federal government to detain people and violate their human rights is because they're getting money. If they don't have the money, then there wouldn't be, you know, they would not have the resources to jail, to put people in cages. Now, if you think about it, now another aspect of this is that money is directly correlated to the abuses. They have more money, therefore you have more abuses. That what ICE, CBP, what they say is that, oh yeah, we have a great crisis, we need more money, they keep asking for more money, the government gives them more money, and as a result, we see more violations of human rights.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'd read is actually adding more money to the problem is not making this problem better, it's not improving the conditions. It's worsening the abuses because it's expanding, in fact, the number of people that ICE is trying to detain. The more money has not equaled better conditions for people being detained for, may I make clear, like, no reason.
And one thing, what's worse is that people are making, there's people profiteering companies, mm-hmm. corporations making money out of this. In the business mentality, of course they're going to keep costs low. They don't even give them like toothpaste and stuff like that. Like we all have seen the reports from these facilities, and they're making a lot of money out of immigrant detention.
Yeah, and not just I mean, when we're talking about reallocating money, I thought that point that you made mm-hmm. earlier was so important about this administration's priorities, increasing military spending, increasing funding for detention centers, while slashing left and right budgets elsewhere, taking money away from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and to fund some of these detention centers while we've got wildfires raging, while we've got hurricanes over the course of the past several months approaching several states in the southeast, Florida, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands. So instead of funding the things that people desperately need, this money is going instead to these detention centers. So, yeah, the goals of the Defund Hate campaign are so important, hugely important.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, that's the loophole that's been being abused, right, by the, like, with the, even just though we keep passing these CRs to kind of keep things where they are, like, because FEMA, like, falls into the same kind of department area as ICE and all of them, they're able to do some kind of covert
push money around.
Yeah.
It's
very disturbing. But kind of transitioning into what people can do to fight some of this, yeah. I mean, are there things that people can do to voice their opinion on appropriations and to say that they don't want their money and their taxpayer dollars going to ICE and to those kind of immigrant detention policies that are harming so many people?
Yeah, the involvement of people in DACA or even the appropriation process is key. We've seen that it does work when you call your member of Congress, when you make that call and you tell them, like, I do not agree of you giving more money to ICE and CBP so they can, you know, use this money to abuse the rights of immigrants and children. That is not morally right. And when members of Congress, when elected officials hear this, like, they start to see what it is like that their own constituents are waking up. And it is key that we make this a priority because we have to switch the mentality around immigration policy and the immigration vision that, like, the vision on immigration that we have to have in the United States. Because for a long time, we have been told that you need to increase money for border security, for ICE, for CBP. That framework of giving them more money in exchange of relief. The Trump administration has been using that a lot. And look where we are. We have seen the horrible, horrible things that has been happening at the border and in these detention facilities. So we have to switch that mentality, and we have to think that, no, giving more money, giving more enforcement, giving Trump the wall is not going to make a difference. It's not going to move us forward.
So we have just about a minute left here in our show. We have been talking today to Juan Manuel Guzman from United We Dream, the advocacy and policy manager. And Juan Manuel, if folks would like to find more information about you and the work that you do, where can they find that information?
Oh, well, see, if you want to find more information about what we do, go to unitedwithdream.org. You will be able to find everything related to DACA and everything that the work that we are doing. If you want to find information about me, you can look on my Twitter profile. I'm at @_JMGuzman or J Guzman. So, yeah, that's where you will be able to find.
Great. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, you've been listening to the Generation Progress Takeover of the Leslie Marshall Show. I am your co-host, Charlotte Hancock.
And I'm Emily Leach.
And we'll be right back. We'll be back next week to talk to you more.